Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umep. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umep, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Hey, Lynette Morgan's voice has changed a little bit today. Mark Holland filling in for Lynette this week, and though we have a very full studio, not just Mark filling in, but we have all of the doctors in studio plus one extra. So, Dr. Mixon, why don't you introduce our special guest today?
Well, we have two special guests. We have Mark, too. Why don't
you
talk about
that? That's right.
Because everybody's wondering what happened to Lynette.
Well, actually, it was what happened to Jerry Berg.
Yeah,
true. Jerry died a while back, and I needed someone to take his place. And now Mark is filling in both for Jerry Berg and when Lynette's not
there
here.
There you go.
I can fill in for Lynette, too.
Yeah, and you know, we miss Jerry, and we hope he's fine wherever he is.
Yep.
But Jerry found Mark for us, so Mark, we're very happy to have you.
Yeah.
And when
it
I saw you...
It was quite a quick transition there. He held on right to the last minute.
He really did.
Yeah, he did.
And you know, he and I used to record Beautiful You together, and then you stepped in seamlessly, so I appreciate that. Thank you very much. And then I met you today for the first time, and everybody
listening,
I have to tell you, he's tall. He's really very tall.
He's almost as tall as I am.
Yes. So anyway, welcome, Mark.
Glad
happy to have
here.
You. And then, of course...
Go ahead and introduce her for us. Okay?
Oh, sure. I would love to.
Since my you work
colleague,
with her every day in the
that's
clinic?
That's right. My colleague in my Kirkland Clinic. Very happy to have Dr. Christine Brazel here with us, too. Say hello, Christine.
Good morning, Samira. Good morning, Jerry. Good morning, Mark.
Yeah, okay. We've had...
Move a little closer to the microphone or move the microphone closer to you.
There we go. Is that a little better?
That
is definitely a whole lot better. Dr. Brazel has been with us for a while now in the Kirkland Clinic. She's a full-time physician. Very, very happy to have her join us in the clinic. She brings a radiance and a lot of knowledge to the medical team, and we appreciate her knowledge and appreciate her being with us and appreciate her as a person and as a friend. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Samira.
Okay. And I guess we normally start off with a little medical update. And I guess, you know, it's really interesting. The actual COVID, the true emergency died a year ago. And the government finally got around to admitting it last month. And now finally we're starting to see research papers being published on COVID and long COVID, et cetera. And it's turning out that this particular virus has a propensity for fat. It grows in fat cells, which is why the fattest people are the ones that died the most. So, being overweight gave you a 650% increased risk of being hospitalized or killed by COVID. But it also is a neurologic virus, and it hits brains and peripheral nervous system pretty heavily. So there's now being a raft of papers being published on long neurologic sequela, people with memory and concentration issues, depression, fatigue, and it looks like it's hitting the microglia, the supporting cells in the brain that kind of hold everything together, can develop long-term inflammatory processes after a COVID infection.
Interesting. So, hey, Jerry, does it cause any demyelination?
I have not yet seen a paper triggering demyelination diseases. So we're not seeing an increase in MS or lateralizing sclerosis or anything like that. But depression, fatigue, memory issues are frighteningly common in people with long COVID.
Wow. Okay.
And so you know, I think we're going to be living with the sequela of this for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we do see it in the clinics as well, right? A lot of our patients express a lot of these symptoms. And sometimes some weeks we see a lot and then on others we don't. But I do hear it more frequently now. Maybe I'm in tune more or not, I don't know, but it certainly is, seems to be the topic of the week or the month and has been since COVID.
Yeah.
A lot of social isolation also precluded to that and depression symptoms, anxiety, and then therefore the impact of, you know, work versus not going back to work or, you know, and people talk about that. I tell them, we didn't close clinics for a single day.
Nope.
There were weeks where nobody came in, but our team was there. We were all there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started calling and saying, hey, come on back.
Yeah, well, you know, our team tends to be a relatively healthy group, and healthy, lean people are in almost no danger from COVID. I mean, that's just the real world. If you have a suppressed immune system from, you know, chemotherapy or radiation, yes. You know, if you've got a leukemia,
yeah.
You know, if you're a poorly controlled diabetic. But the single biggest risk factor was just weight.
Mm.
You know, the fatter you are, the higher the risk of dying.
Mm.
But that's true for almost every disease in America today.
Mm.
You know, I mean, being overweight causes at least 50% of the medical care expenses in America.
Mm.
You know, if we were a lean country, we could cut the cost of medical care by at least 50% and have a significant extension of our lifespan.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you triple dementia, 2.7%, you know, 270% increase in heart attacks and strokes, you know, diabetes 6 times higher than lean people. You know, degenerative arthritis, you know, is a little better than doubled. So, you know, if you look at diabetes, heart attacks, strokes, dementia, and degenerative diseases, all triggered by being overweight. And 22% of all the cancer in America triggered by being overweight. I mean, if we could make this a lean country, just that one change would make a profound impact on lifespan and health span in America. Well, you know, I can control what I eat. I can't control what other people do.
I mean, that is very true. But also, I was reading recently that people who exercise regularly actually perceive pain a lot less than those who don't.
Well, and here's an interesting one for all of our people that have either had a breast cancer or are worried about getting one or have had a family issue. Women who, after their breast cancer diagnosis, take up exercise, take up a regular exercise, have a 25% better survival than those who stay sedentary.
Mm-hmm. And this is just exercise. You're not
talking
about weight loss.
I'm not talking about any dietary change. I'm not talking about weight loss. The only change being just getting out and exercising improves survival by 25%.
Yeah, you
if
know,
we had a drug that did that, everybody would buy it. You know,
that's so true. I mean, we get lulled into complacency. You know, there are days when I'll go home and I'll be motivated to work out, and then there are days when I could just sit. But it's in a mind; it's your mindset. Sometimes I know the weather plays a role, but I think at the end of the day, we all make excuses. Somebody said to me, "You don't work out because you haven't made it a priority. If you made time to work out, you would work out."
Everybody's got the same 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
You know, if some of us have time, some of us pretend we don't.
True.
But it's pretense. It really is. You know, we prioritize other things above our health. So, and, you know, I'm lazy. Once I get to work, I'm working.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to do the bulk of my exercise first thing in the morning. That's why, you know, I'm up at 5, I have breakfast by 6, and I'm out on the trails by 6:15, 6:30, and get in my miles before I go to work. Because if I don't do it before I go to work, I'm not likely to do it.
Yeah. I've often said that the way you do your lifestyle is probably better than what most people do, which is eat a big breakfast, eat a lighter lunch, and eat nothing in the evening. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it's like intermittent fasting after lunch till breakfast the next day.
Yep.
But for most of us that are rushing out of the door in the morning, barely together, and huffing and puffing up the stairs to the office.
Well, at least you huff and puff up the stairs instead of taking the elevator. That's good.
I do. I was talking to you on the phone the other day, and huffing and puffing.
I was thinking, what is he thinking?
I'm walking up to the office.
I said, either Sunil's getting lucky this morning, or she's exercising. I'm not sure which.
Well, if Sunil got lucky, you would get unlucky, because I would not be in the office.
Okay.
No, enough. But we're walking, rushing out of the door, you know. Either you have to wake up early to work out and eat, or you sleep in and make it to office on time.
That's right.
And I prefer to sleep in and make it to the office on time.
That's why I get up at 5.
And that's right, you do. And then, you know, lunch is hit or miss. And so evening meal is by far and away the most common meal that my family and I eat together.
Mm-hmm.
And it depends upon when I get home, what we prepare. So now it's not me. It's like whoever gets home first, we try. And whatever we have prepped, either you're a good prepper or you're not. I'm not a good prepper. I go by the seat of my pants. So
okay. It's
a hit or a miss. But it is the only meal that we will have together. So we do make an emphasis. In which case, then my intermittent fast is after dinner till dinner the next day. Except for coffee.
Except for coffee. Well, you know. Nectar of the gods, coffee, yes. So, which is, I have always said, you can't beat a mocha. You know, sugar, caffeine, chocolate.
Is that what's hidden in your mug?
I just have an Americano.
Okay.
With Splenda.
Okay.
Anyway. So, today, what are we going to talk about? First of all, why don't you give out some phone numbers so that
we actually already have a couple of people standing by.
Oh, good.
And we can take your call as well. That call, the phone number, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770 for your questions for Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, or maybe Dr. Brazel. You told me that's how you
Brazel, razzle, dazzle. That's
yes.
Right.
Dr. Brazel. We'll find out more what her expertise is here in just a moment. But do we want to take a first call right now?
Well, actually, shall we just mention about the gallery fair
coming
up?
Okay, that's right.
We'll talk about it periodically today.
Well, yeah. Well, if you all recall, a few months ago, we did a special on the gallery test. And this was a test, simple blood test, but it tests for 50 different cancer markers. Hmm. It's a screening test. If it comes up positive, we have to do confirmation tests. But 50 different tests. Now, it's a little on the pricey, $1,250, which is $25 per cancer, which is pretty reasonable, $25 per cancer. And it's the only test I know that will screen for 50 different cancers. But in an effort to encourage people, we have taken our already heavily discounted lab work, that big 70-page lab panel that we do. It's been $600 and it's over $2,000 for the lab work. Yeah, now we're cutting it down to $250 if they do it with the gallery.
Gallery test, right.
So you can get our great big panel in addition to the gallery test for what is it,
$1,495.
Oh, yeah. So $1,495, you end up that way with your $1,000 plus gallery test and our $2,000 plus lab work. So $3,000+ worth of stuff for
half that.
Yeah, for 50% off.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good.
And that'll be on June 24th at the Kirkland Clinic. So you do have to call to book your appointment. And obviously, since we offer gallery to all of our patients, this is for anybody who's not a patient.
Right.
And so any listeners who are interested in knowing what their risk for cancer is or want to do a test for early detection and are curious about what their other panel is, they can book this, and that'll allow them 1 hour of a doctor visit with any of our doctors in the Kirkland team. And we will book that through the clinic. They'll fill out a medical questionnaire And we were very we actually got a very good turnout for it last time we did this. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that we'd try it again, see if there are other people who are curious, want to know more about their own health. So this would be an opportunity.
All right. And then I have a whole nother one in mind for August. It'll be Dr. Mixon's birthday special.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
Well, timeless.
To book that appointment at the Kirkland studio, I think you can just call our main number, which is 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. That's on June 24th, the Kirkland Clinic Gallery Health Fair. Just ask about that to book your appointment. We'll be back with several calls in just a moment, and you can call in your questions as well. It is Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic.
Primrose Lane.
Primrose Lane.
Ooh. Are you singing?
No. You gotta remember, I have a range of three notes. I hit all three of them with enthusiasm whenever they come by, but the rest of my singing is pretty poor.
People are calling 800-465-8770 with their questions, and we have actually quite a few people already on the line this morning. Let's go to John in Vancouver. What's your question for the doctors, John?
Hello, John.
Got a quick one. Used to use it for household cleaning, but now I got a flyer for Borax.
Borax. Okay. How can we help you today, John?
It's supposed to lower your blood pressure. Borax.
Borax. All right.
It says it lowers your blood pressure and your A1C. Any truth to that?
No, I have no idea. Absolutely none. I have never really researched borax and lipid levels and blood pressure. I suppose, you know, if you overdose and it kills you, your blood pressure drops to zip. But that's, I remember the 20 Mule Team borax thing they used to use it as a laundry detergent. Yeah. I have no idea about human beings consuming borax. We're starting the day off with a stump the doctor.
Well, not really. I'm the one who called you a couple of months ago about a high estradiol count. And you said it was probably an error made at the lab.
Yeah. Most likely.
And it turns out to be this. I got turned over to the University of Oregon Health and Science University. They told me to stop taking all supplements for 3 weeks and then run a test. I stopped all supplements, took the test, everything normal.
Yep.
So they didn't know which supplement did it, but they knew it was one of them.
Okay, well, either that or the first lab test was not accurate. Either way, but yes. You know, if you're going to repeat the lab work to find out if it was a glitch, you need to keep everything else the same. If you change your regimen and then you do it, then you don't know whether the first lab test was a glitch or if it was something that you were doing that you stopped. You know, the scientific method is you change one variable at a time. Not a whole bunch of them. Mm. But, you know, about all you can do is you take your supplement list in, you sit down with your doctor, you go through your supplements, and you see which ones they think might have an impact on aromatase production. See, there's a hormone in human tissues, primarily in fat, called aromatase that converts testosterone into estradiol. Because testosterone and estradiol are only one hydroxyl group difference. So anything that dehydroxylates the testosterone makes it into estrogen. And since that enzyme is very abundant in human fat, the heavier a man is, the higher his estrogen tends to run. But when I see a guy that's had normal estrogens and they suddenly jump up, that's when I start suspecting it might be the lab.
Yeah, that makes me think something happened at the lab too, Jerry.
Yeah, because, you know, they...
Well, sometimes they change a reagent. Remember we had an issue many years ago where, and it is by LabCorp, where a different protein molecule was being measured as estrogen, and it was causing patients' estradiol levels to go up.
Well, yeah, or they... The lab test said they went up, but they really didn't.
But they really didn't, right.
Because it was a protein being produced. Mm-hmm. But that was a protein being triggered by a medicine we were giving them. We were giving them Arimidex, which is designed to block the production of estrogen out of testosterone. Mm-hmm. And yet the blocking drug was producing a protein that was interfering with the lab test, and the lab test erroneously read it as high estrogens. Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. Nothing done to or by human beings is perfect.
Mm-hmm. Well, we also know that biotin strongly interferes with reading all the hormones, and it's a very common supplement people take and don't know they're getting a lot of it.
Yes, you're absolutely right. There are so many supplements that interact with labs. Mm-hmm. Biotin, particularly when people use for hair loss prevention, interferes so much with thyroid. Mm-hmm. It really, I tell people, don't take the two together because we will never get a baseline thyroid assessment for you.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't raise the levels. It just interferes with the reading.
Yeah, it does interfere.
Yeah. It's the lab test gets screwed up. It's not your body. It's just the lab test.
And so to prove his point, you know, some supplement must have interfered. But why suddenly, right?
Yeah.
Unless
he made a sudden change in his supplements.
Something, yeah.
But if the supplements were the same and the lab test suddenly jumped, then I suspect the lab test rather than the supplement.
Right.
But also, what is high estradiol? You know, we don't have a reference range for him.
But when he called us a few weeks ago, it was quite high. It was at 200 or something. It was a big number.
For
300.
Wow. So from a baseline normal to suddenly jump to that, that's quite significant.
That sounds like a lab error.
Yeah. All right. Well, at any rate.
Well, thank
you're
you
welcome,
very much,
sir. Take care.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Thanks, John. That opens up a line for you if you're listening today, 800-465-8770. Let's move on to line two. Ernie in Burlington has a question. And what's your question, Ernie?
Hello, Ernie.
Good morning, Dr. Mixon, et cetera. I'm an 89-year-old male, obviously. Maybe 9 months ago, you talked about what aging does from a health standpoint to various individuals. Mm-hmm. One of the things you mentioned was that we regrow less as we get older. My wife died a year and a half ago, and I think since that time my hair has not grown less, it's grown more. It's almost like I'm a 20-year-old again with my facial hair, my hair on my head, and hair on my ears, all over the place. And I'm just, it's annoying. That's what it is.
All right. Well, I got to tell you, as I'm getting older, the hair on my head is growing less, so I'd like a little bit. You know, I don't know. Women have been known to make men pull their hair out, but that's a whole different issue. I can't explain that one. What would happen unless,
I mean,
do you have your testosterone levels going down?
If he just started hormone replacement therapy, it would explain the body hair. It would not explain why he's getting more scalp hair.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
Yeah,
but
I mean, I'd love to take the hair off my chest and belly and put it on the top of my head.
Was some drugs, Jerry, if somebody put him on a finasteride or something like that, for whatever reason, he might be experiencing. You start taking minoxidil. I don't know.
Finasteride would decrease loss. It wouldn't cause growth. I don't know. Interesting.
Take lots of vitamins, minerals, lots of supplements. I'm pretty good as far as health wise is concerned. Don't have cancer. Don't have any major problems with my liver. My testosterone seems to be in the right range. I have no diabetes.
Yeah,
and the major operation I had was the replacement of my aortic valve back in 2015, and I recuperated from that very fine. And so, you know, it's just annoying. That's all.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, if you're a man in your 80s and you're suddenly growing more hair on your head, I would roll my eyes to heaven and whisper, thank you, God, because you've got just the opposite problem the rest of us do. So, you know.
Well, yeah, many men your age would die for more.
Well, no, if they die, it stops growing in a few days.
Would spend a lot of money.
Yes, they'd spend a lot of, and they do spend a lot of money doing hair transplants and stuff.
That's right.
My friend, count your blessings. You know, you're doing great.
With the fact that my dad was born in Sicily, as well as his two other brothers, and my brother has a long hair, a lot of hair, but he's only about 77 years old, 12 years younger than I am.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know whether my background in Sicilian has to do anything with it.
I don't know.
I suddenly increase it. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me ask Guido next time I come across him. I have no idea. Okay, what is the call today?
I've been meaning to call you a long time, but I figured maybe I'd get through today. So appreciate it.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir.
Hey, thank you for the call. It made us laugh. Anyway.
Thank you, Ernie.
But we wish you all the best. Thank you.
Hey, that opens another line, 800-465-8770. Leading Edge Medicine is what you're listening to today. Lots of people listening this morning and calling. Let's move on to Don in Des Moines. He has a question. Don, what's your question for the doctors?
Hello, Don.
Hello. Hey, guys. How you doing? Hey, Dr. Mixon, I recently had shoulder surgery.
Uh-huh.
So as a longevity patient, would it be prudent for me to temporarily increase testosterone in an effort to promote healing?
Yes, and also to make sure that your senescent cells are suppressed well. You might want to talk to your longevity doc about the senescent cell therapy, too.
I did that probably 3 weeks before the surgery.
Perfect.
And,
that's exactly what you
next
want.
Week, yeah. Per your advice, actually, I called you a month or so ago. And I'm having PRP treatment next week.
Good.
When would it be appropriate for me to have another dose of senescent cell treatment?
I wish I knew. Yeah, this is one of those things that's driving us crazy. Every different tissue in your body puts out a different mix of senescent cell products. And so your skin puts out different products than your fat, which puts out different than your muscle, which puts out different than your brain and your kidney and your liver and everything else. And so the researchers are going crazy right now trying to figure out what we can measure in blood that might give us a good indication of when somebody needs another senescent cell treatment. We know that we can, you know, that 9 days of therapy will drop the average person about 70%. And that's fine because most of us over 50 have a significant number of senescent cells. But then we each make new senescent cells at a different rate, depending on how much we exercise and what our diet is like and how many polyphenols are in our diets and our supplements. And so the question of when to retreat comes down to a clinical judgment. Usually the people that get a senescent cell therapy, within about 2 weeks, as their levels drop, they start feeling significantly better. When they start to slump again is usually when we retreat them. But that's a very subjective sort of evaluation, and it's not nearly as good as we'd like to do.
I really like my patients to pair the Prolon diet when they're doing these because it cleans up that cellular damage they're trying to get rid of without a heavy hit of the dasatinib.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And so, you know, Prolon prior to the dasatinib therapy is always a nice way. I know Samara has been recommending it for some time, too. You know, for me, you know, I tend to do the big one, and then I do 3 days in about 6 weeks or so, and then I do another 3 days in 6 weeks. And then if I'm not feeling as good as I want to, maybe the following, you know, couple of months, I'll do 2 3-day cycles, and I end up doing a full 9-day cycle about every 6 to 9 months. But, you know, do I have objective data to say that's the right thing? No, that just seems to what fits my personal physiology pretty well.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe, Mark, shall we take a break and then come back? And
yeah, I think we need to go to break time here. Maybe we'll continue this call a little bit after the break as well. That
don't
opens
go away,
up,
my friend.
Opens up a line for you if you're listening today.
I'll wait.
Okay. 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770 with your questions. This is Leading Edge Medicine brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic.
Hear that whistle, it's 10 o'clock.
Welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, and we're continuing a call with Dawn from Des Moines, but there is a line open for you to call as people are dancing in the studio here. 800-465-8770 is your number to call for questions for Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, or Dr. Brazel. We have three doctors in today.
You know, normally I love a break from the radio, so last week was a very welcome break, but I actually missed being here. I was around town. We, you know, Sunil was on call, so we have to hang around town. It was a fun weekend. It was nice. Yeah. But then come Monday morning, I said, yeah, you know, I missed that. Mm-hmm. And today it seems like I've been gone forever.
Yeah, well, see, last week I was up in Victoria with my wife and daughter.
Yeah.
I wasn't missing it at all.
I wasn't missing it on the weekend, but come back. I was like, yeah, it's been a long time since I did the radio.
I know.
But anyway.
A couple of things. The only really great tests we can do for senescent cells right now involve tissue biopsies, and that's the frustrating thing. If we actually go in and take a piece of your tissue out, we can stain it and see the senescent cells. They stain differently than normal cells. But, you know, most people, including me, do not want anybody cutting out hunks of my skin, fat, or muscles on a regular basis. So that's why everyone in the industry is desperate to find a good blood-based laboratory test.
And just coming back from the conference in April, Jerry, they're still reinforcing everything that we do, which is complete blood counts, metabolic panel, inflammation markers. So those baselines we are measuring anyways, and but unfortunately, they're not really specific to this.
The only ones that I have seen that can be measured in white cells, and again, because white cells are a tissue, so if they isolate the white blood cells, they can measure P13 and P53.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's still kind of an iffy research, and the commercial labs aren't doing it for us yet. So
right.
We're kind of stuck.
And then the only other comment
I'm real quickly, and I'm sorry to interrupt. So based on the imaging done prior to surgery, x-rays and MRI, the surgeon was pleasantly surprised how much better my tissue was based on the imaging. And I suspect, you know, obviously I had nothing to prove it or to base it on, but I suspect it's from being a longevity patient and the senescent cell treatment that I've undergone last year.
Yeah. And, you know, what can I tell you? That's why I do my senescent cell therapy regularly. But Samara had a suggestion about your testosterone. So.
Yeah, I was going to suggest that you talk to your longevity doctor about increasing the dose of testosterone cream. And what I have suggested to patients in the past is to apply the cream at the site of the surgery. That provides local anti-inflammatory benefits. And so rather than just increase the dose randomly, just go ahead and make sure they're monitoring you, watching you for potential side effects, but apply the cream to where you've had your surgery. It'll really help in the healing process.
Yeah. Well, it will help
it. What she recommended.
Yeah.
Yeah, good. But, you know, it's kind of interesting because applying the testosterone to the wound will actually give an uglier scar, okay, because it triggers growth. And so the fibrin in the scar grows. So you're healing the ligaments, you're healing the tendon, you're healing the muscles, but you also get a bigger scar. Prettier scars come from putting some estrogen. So if your wife is in the clinic, you might take a little dab of her estrogen cream and just with a fingertip rub that right on the incision itself. And that gives a much smoother, prettier, more cosmetically attractive scar.
And that estrogen is not going to hurt you either. So science has changed about estradiol in men. So the biased, if your wife is our patient and using it, will actually be very helpful.
Right.
But, Jerry, if that fails, he can come to Bellomedica and we can take care of it for him.
And we have machines that will make the scar smaller. That's true. All
right. Well, I prefer the badass look, so I'll go with the heavy scar.
Oh, okay. One of those. All right.
All right.
We have tattoo removal as well for later.
Well, then go ahead and put your testosterone on it.
That's right. Yeah, well, I'm going to tell a little story here just about the first night I was with my wife, okay? So as many people that are listening to the show for a while know, I got a lot of scars. You know, when I was young and dumb and had way more hormone than brain, I ran off and joined the Army, and I've got shrapnel wounds and gunshot wounds and one bayonet wound and all sorts of stuff. I am definitely one of those people who's prettier with his clothes on than off. And when I had met my wife, Mandine, the first night we were going to spend together, I reminded her that I had told her about all these scars, but she had never seen them before. And so I was a little worried because I really, really was in love with this woman. I wanted her to be mine forever. And I didn't want her getting offended by my scarring. And so I told her, I said, you know, honey, you've heard about them, but there's a difference in seeing these ugly scars and hearing. And she said, Jerry, let me decide what I think. So she unbuttoned my shirt and took it off. She undid my trousers and dropped them down around my ankles, and I'm standing there in my shorts. She started at my front, and she walked all the way around my body, running her fingertips over some of the big scars and puckers and holes in my body, got all the way back around to my front, looked up into my eyes, and said, "Those are a warrior's scars. They make me feel safe because I know you'll fight to protect what you love." She could not have scripted that better had it come from Hollywood. You know, I wanted to pick her
up, beautiful,
carry her off and marry her on the spot.
Yeah.
In fact, I did pick her up and carry her to the next room where there was a bed. But that's a different issue.
I reminded you there was a picture that a long time ago now that you were holding her in your hand.
Yeah.
I have seen that picture.
Yes. Yeah, one of my show-offs from my past was I love picking my wife up with one hand and holding her in the air.
Yeah. No, that's a very sweet story,
Jerry. She's a little sweet Chinese girl, and I'm a great big hulking. So, you know, it works out.
Don, a little too much information than you asked for. But to go back to your question.
That was a great story.
Isn't that awesome? So testosterone is good for you. Intermittent fasting in the 5-day program, I certainly would recommend that. And then the senescent cell therapy is based on what you and your doctor decide would be very helpful as well.
Can I ask you a really quick question for my wife?
Yeah.
Sure.
Is it recommended for a healthy female to have an annual mammogram, or is that controversial?
At what age?
52.
She's in the range where she should have it every year. People that are worried about radiation, because it's true, the radiation will raise cancer risk a little bit, but it will find so many early cancers that it'll save a lot more lives than it costs. So as a public health measure, the mammogram is a net positive by a long shot. Now, if cost were not an object, I would go with MRIs.
Mm.
Okay, MRIs and ultrasounds will pick up even more early cancers than the mammograms do, because they're more sensitive. You see a finer discrimination within the soft tissues with the MRI, but they cost about 100 times more, and so.
You know, there are a lot more companies that are starting to do preventative MRIs that are now, charging outside of insurance. We don't have anything in Seattle yet, but I think it will come. But other big states like California and up north in Vancouver and other big cities around the United States are starting to offer screening MRIs that people can pay. So these are your markers. They do a review with you as well. minimal, and the radiation exposure with all of this is very minimal. So it's a whole body scan. It will look at breast tissue as well. It'll look at brain, bone, everything. And then you can do those as frequently as you want to,
sure,
and the radiation exposure is minimal. But if you want to go the insurance route, then you are subject to what the limitations are.
Of your policy. Yeah.
Yeah, and some of them do restrict you to every 2 years. So you'll have to find out what she can and cannot do. But MRIs are a good way to go. Now, there's another thing, that ultrasound and looking at heat. Some people do that. Some people believe in that. And simple reason is there's no radiation exposure to that. I have seen them in the past. Nobody recently has brought me one of those. So I don't know if they're going out of favor or not, because the MRIs are becoming more popular. But there are people doing that every other year in order to avoid radiation exposure. Mm-hmm. But it's not the gold standard.
I see, my wife's in her mid-40s, and I just pushed her to get her first mammogram.
Yeah. And that's a good idea. Everybody should.
Well, the other thing to consider, that every woman has an individual risk. If you look at your last mammogram report, it'll tell you, do you have fibrocystic breast disease? Do you have dense breasts? Those women absolutely should be getting an annual until they're told they're not needing anymore, whereas the MRI might be the extended conversation after that, depending on the findings. So that's the BI-RADS score. It's always at the bottom of the report, but it's not the little letter you get at home that says your thing is fine. So you actually have to see the report. Do you have dense breasts? Yeah. Do you have fibrocystic breast disease?
But the thing is that when you put women on estrogens, mm-hmm. they're going to have dense breasts.
Yes.
And that's just because the breast atrophy, the mm-hmm. breast tissue itself shrivels up, and an older woman ends up with just fat and skin mm-hmm. and no real breast tissue. And so if we give them our estrogens to protect mm-hmm. their brain and their heart and their lungs and their skin and their mm-hmm. bones, they are going to get more youthful, denser breasts.
And the problem with that, Dawn, for your purpose, is that the more dense or fibrocystic the breast tissue is, it's harder to see a cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And so those women do need more frequent screening.
Mm-hmm. And the MRI can be covered by the insurance at that point if it's considered a high-risk density.
And then personal history, you know, family history, those really play a huge role as well in decision-making, especially for insurance purposes.
But the upshot is, get her checked.
Thank you very much. You guys are outstanding. Appreciate it.
Take care, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks, Dawn. We'll get back to some more calls here in just a moment. I want to mention the phone number again is 800-465-8770. Call in your questions right now. Three doctors in the studio, Dr. Mixon, of course, Dr. Umat, and special guest today, Dr. Christine Brazel is in studio as well. Back with more of your calls, Leading Edge Medicine. Thank you for listening today. Okay, there's the king. And your calls right now, 800-465-8770, Leading Edge Medicine. And John's been waiting on the line for a while. John from Auburn, what is your question for the doctors today, John?
Hello, John.
Good morning. Sucralose, there's just a recent study that said it's genotoxic. And there's so many things like whey powders that include sucralose in it, mm-hmm. and that mm-hmm. acesulfame K.
Mm-hmm.
Evidently, sucralose is a little more dangerous than sugar.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things more dangerous than sugar.
I probably shouldn't have said I had
I know, Splenda that's
in
what
my
you
coffee.
I know,
that
that's
probably
what
sparked a call.
Yeah.
Did you say it on air? Oh, you did. Okay.
Yeah.
It's all your fault,
I'm learning,
Mark.
I'm learning.
See, it's your fault.
I'm being virtuous. I'm only got green tea in my cup this morning.
So. Oh, I got to have that coffee shot. My goodness.
Anywho, yeah. I do not like artificial sweeteners, period. Okay. Splenda is probably your best bet, I guess. But really and truly, I just don't like artificial sweeteners.
You mean stevia?
Stevia.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's from a plant.
Well, it's a plant leaf.
Yeah.
But stevia is probably the, quote, most natural, least dangerous that we know of. Of course, next week, somebody may come out with a study on stevia. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
personally, if I need to sweeten something, I put a little bit of honey in it. I love the taste of honey. You know, it's me and Pooh Bear. But the trick isn't how much sugar or honey you use as a sweetener. It's how much and how often and what is your total calorie intake.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand some people who do crave that. It might be very hard for them. But time and time again, it's, you know, whenever I'm telling people what to do, it's always count the sugar, cut out the sugar.
Well, you know, our problem is Mother Nature. Yeah. You know, human breast milk is very sweet. And the good Lord made it that way. And that's to encourage babies to nurse and drink and get some, you know, some calories in so they can grow and be healthy. And so right at our mother's breast, we are introduced to sweet is good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we are genetically coded to seek out that.
Yeah.
And as a consequence, I sometimes wonder if our cultural craving for everything to have sweetness in it might be this urge to return to mom's security or some such thing.
Hey, I don't know about that. It just feels good for a while, and then after that you crash and you go, oh my God, why did I do that?
You know, and again, this is, I used to do really sweet stuff just like everybody else back when I was Fat Jerry with my big round belly. I ought to put some of those pictures of me, you know, 50 pounds heavier on the website just so people can see.
Before and afters?
This is me. This is Dr. Mixon when he started his program. This is Dr. Mixon now at 76.
Yeah. You know. It's actually a good idea.
Because it looks like a totally different person.
Mm-hmm.
But I used to eat, if I had coffee, I dumped 2-3-4 spoonfuls of sugar in it.
Mm.
You know, I would go to, at lunch, I'd go over to Safeway because right then is when they took that fresh bread out of the oven.
Mm-hmm.
And they had this incredible cheese, raisin, walnut bread.
Mm.
And I would buy it and eat the whole damn loaf.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Costco does have an amazing cranberry walnut bread.
But since I started living healthier, you know, I've had to cut way down my sweet. And it got a lot easier when I married Bandine because the Chinese don't do sweet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just don't do much in the way of sugar. And our daughter has been raised on that Asian Chinese diet.
Mm.
And she had a Coke. When I remember her taking a sip of Coke and saying, yuck, that's way too sweet.
Yeah, it
you
is.
Know? And we don't argue with her.
Another advantage of getting those artificial sweeteners out of the diet is that it keeps your craving going. It's making you eat something you know you shouldn't be eating anyway. So by eliminating them, the brain kind of calms down, doesn't start looking for the cookies and the next snack and the next snack. And they do that by design. So DNA damage aside, Splenda is designed to trick you to keep going when you probably should have stopped a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes it a lot easier to stick to intermittent fasting and some of our other diet plans when you don't put the artificial sweetener in.
Mm, yep. For sure.
So get the Splenda and everything else super sweet out of your diet, my friend. That's all we can tell you.
One other thing. Concerning healing from like surgery or a wound.
Yeah.
I haven't heard you mention HGH. Does that make sense to administer HGH?
Yeah. HGH or HCH?
Human growth hormone.
Okay, yeah, HGH. In this state, we can't use it. Almost every other state in the union, last time I checked, and it's been a while, there were three states that took the position that it was opposed to federal law, and that was Washington, Oregon, and Massachusetts. Every other state in the union recognizes that doctors can write growth hormone off-label. So we have a rogue medical board here that doesn't follow the law or the science, unfortunately. So any doctor that writes it in this state is putting his license in jeopardy. But would it help?
Could you just pop on down to Oregon get a prescription from a doctor and come back.
No, like I said, Washington, Oregon, and Massachusetts are the three that, that say no.
Keep driving.
You can go over to Idaho and get it. That's, you know, that doctor doesn't have any risk. Or, you know, Illinois or Texas or Florida or just about anywhere in the country. The federal courts have been unanimous in holding that doctors do have a legal right under federal law to write growth hormone off-label. But our board, like I said, is a bit of a rogue. So we're kind of stuck. They're not right, but they have the power. And in this case, you know, might makes right. They have the power, ergo we have to follow their lead.
You indicated at one time that human growth hormone can send you in a bad direction.
Yes,
Or in a good direction.
Yeah. Well, yeah, growth hormone it helps tissue to grow faster, you know, and that's why athletes loved to use it. And that's why the surveillance boards won't let them use it because it gives them an unfair advantage over other athletes. Mm-hmm. But yes, for instance, it speeds up bone turnover. So if your metabolism has shifted towards bone growth, it'll make your bones grow stronger, denser, faster. But if your metabolism, like many older people, has shifted towards bone loss, growth hormone will make your bones thin faster. So it speeds up whatever's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so it can speed up growth. It can speed up destruction.
Cancer.
Diabetes.
Diabetes is something we were worried about in the 1980s and early 90s. Mm-hmm. But it turns out that growth hormone, when you take it, the first 4 to 6 weeks, blood sugars go up a bit,
mm-hmm.
but then they normalize.
Oh, good.
And when you look at people that because of pituitary damage, mm-hmm. and they're using really high doses of growth hormone, I mean 10 times more than we would normally mm-hmm. use for older people, their risk of diabetes is the same as people that are not using it. The function is weight, is fat. And people with low growth hormone tend to be fat.
Mm-hmm.
And because they can't make muscle very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so being fat gave them a high risk of diabetes. It wasn't the growth hormone, it was the obesity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. And the cancer incidence, again, the international database that now has hundreds of thousands of years of people on growth hormone, again, cancer incidence is totally flat, just the same as with non-users.
Mm-hmm.
So these things about cancer and diabetes really outdated by 50 years. But again, we just can't use it in this state.
A cancer patient. Would rapamycin be a benefit to a cancer patient?
Probably not. We don't really know. Here's our problem. We've got a lot of data on rapamycin. You got to remember, this drug was only discovered about 2012. So it's very new. We've had it around for only about 10 or 11 years, and it was a research tool the first 5 years. So we've only had it in clinical medicine for less than a decade. In people that are taking it every day for transplant suppression, they do very well. But I don't have any data on rapamycin taken by cancer patient. Most doctors are kind of afraid to go there.
There is a slight increased risk of lymphoma in people taking it over the long run if they're cancer patients, the transplant patients.
Yeah. But those are, again, every day.
Yeah.
And most people that are taking rapamycin for aging take it one dose a week
mm-hmm.
instead of a dose every day for years at a time.
And it's a low dose.
And, well, it's relatively low.
2 milligrams.
Yeah. Well, 1 or 2 milligrams, although I take 6 once a week, and Bandine is on 4. Just because she has lower body mass than me. But, you know, the problems that we do know about with rapamycin is your cholesterol will go up, your blood sugar will go up. Growth hormone only raises your blood sugar the first 4 to 6 weeks. Rapamycin will raise your blood sugar and keep it up long term, as long as you're on it, even with weekly administration. So you do need to monitor your A1C, You do need to monitor your lipids carefully if you're going to be on rapamycin.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for answering all my questions.
You're welcome, sir. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay. Thank you, John. And we're getting toward the top of the hour break, and we'll get to our next call after that. But there's a special event coming up on June 24th in Kirkland. Who wants to tell us more about that?
Okay, she's pointing at me.
Well,
because if I'm going to get the finger from a staff, it should be pointing at me, not some other. But,
no, I've been gently asking.
Gently asking, she points. You. All right. On the 24th, we're going to be doing a combination of the gallery test, which is a blood test that screens for 50 different cancers. Now, recognize that test is $1,250, but it's 50 cancers is only $25 per test. So that's pretty small, really. But in order to encourage folks, what we're also doing is, along with the gallery test, for an extra $250, we're going to do our full lab panel that we would normally do for $600. So we're cutting that from $600 to $250. And putting it with the gallery. For that's a total of
$1,495.
$1,495. Yeah. And so you can get screened for 50 cancers and get our whole great big 70-page printout type of lab work.
And
for $1,495. And an hour with a doctor to go over all the results with you. So, you know, those of you that are budget conscious and you really want to get as much bang for the buck as you possibly can, the 24th of this month is the time to do it. Give our clinic a call. And it is only being done in the Kirkland Clinic this time. But if you want to call 866-86-YOUNG and come on in, we will be delighted to draw your blood, follow you up, get you an hour with a doctor, and your lab work.
Mm-hmm. Great. Sign up for that at 866-86-YOUNG. You can also find out more at lmclinic.com. That special gallery health fair in the Kirkland Clinic only, again, happening on June 24th. We need to take a break here at the top of the hour. You are listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinic.